Every Day is Earth Day is supported by Minnesota Valley Federal Credit Union. With two locations in Mankato since 1934, it pays to bank where you're part owner, member NCUA. More at mnvalleyfcu.coop. And Every Day is Earth Day is also supported by members of the Executive Board of the South Central Minnesota Clean Energy Council. Find out more at smcleanenergy.org. Good morning. For Every Day is Earth Day today, we are talking with Holly Bushman. She is an environmental resource specialist with Le Sueur County. And the program we're going to talk about today is Score the Shore. And Score the Shore is a natural resources survey to estimate the amount of habitat in three lakeshore zones, the shoreland, the shoreline, and the aquatic. And Holly is here today to talk about why we're doing this. Good morning, Holly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Well, I'm glad we were able to connect because the Score the Shore survey is something I think that's really important in Minnesota, and I actually had it done to my shoreline, so I want to talk a little bit about that as well. But talk about when this came about, this survey of shorelines, and why it came about.
Yeah, so the Score Your Shore program actually was developed by the Minnesota DNR, and it was developed quite some time ago, so it's not necessarily something new, but I do think that a lot of residents have caught on to this within recent news, which is fantastic in that sense. And the program was essentially developed, like you had mentioned, Karen. It's a tool that lakeshore owners can use to assess their lakeshore property. So essentially, this tool isn't something that would result in any kind of enforcement activities. It's more of an awareness and education tool. So we aren't going to, you know, you're not going to get in trouble for scoring bad or anything like that, but the tool is more of just a resource for lakeshore owners. And I believe it was developed around 2010. So it's been around for quite some time.
And so it's a voluntary thing. So you don't go around saying you have to score your shore. Has it been done statewide or is it just certain areas?
You know, I believe it's been done statewide, and I know there are some counties that do require this as part of their permitting process. So whenever someone's trying to apply for a permit within a shoreland district, they do include this as part of that permit. And we, even at Le Sueur County, have considered this. Again, it's just to have a landowner, like, have that knowledge and understand what their, you know, currently what their shoreline health is scored at. It's not necessarily any kind of enforcement, but more of an awareness tool to add to the mix when people are applying for permits or just want to know more about their shoreline. But yeah, it has been used statewide, and some counties have definitely used it more than others.
Is there an average or is there a report that shows since it's begun in 2010 how we're doing? And is there an assessment that looks back to see if people have improved their scores throughout the years?
There isn't necessarily some kind of average taken. I think that'd be a really good thing for the DNR to do, or even each county locally to do. But what I will say is I think, you know, just even from my conversations that I'm having here, and I'm sure it's really similar throughout the state, is that people are becoming more aware of water quality issues. And so protecting that shoreline and your lakeshore is really important to contribute to that. So I think the awareness is starting to grow, but definitely there's still a lot more ways to improve that and to get more people involved throughout the state.
Well, we have a property on Lake Washington, which is located in Le Sueur County. And so I thought I'd like to try this and see how my shoreline scores, because I've been working to put more plants in because I'm concerned about water quality. I'm also involved on the Lake Washington Improvement Association's Water Quality Committee. And I thought, well, what can I do? So I asked someone from the county to come out because I wasn't sure how to do this. And there's a bunch of zones. And I want you to talk about the zones that somebody on a lakeshore has, a property that it has, and how you divide and look at the different areas and the importance of making things better for water quality.
Yeah, so the zones are really, really important because there's different types of management activities that you would do or different practices. So even though holistically a lake is an ecosystem, there's different zones within a lake and even on shorelines that, you know, have different tools and resources and techniques that you're supposed to use. So the three zones with this tool is an upland zone, a shoreline zone, and an aquatic zone. So the upland zone is basically anything that is right above the shoreline all the way to essentially to the road that you will live on. And then the shoreline itself is just the shoreline zone is just the shoreline. And then there's the aquatic zone, which is anything below that shoreline, and that's essentially in the water. So those are the three zones that we're taking a look at. And they, you know, they have different scoring associated with them and different goals. So as far as the upland zone goes, again, this is upland habitat, so there's different species of plants and different things that might be going on in this zone. And so that's looked at differently, like how a structure is screened, is there upland habitat, those kind of things. Then there's the shoreline zone, which is directly on the shoreline. So a lot of times the best thing you can do for a shoreline is putting some native plants along it. Again, it's protecting it from erosion and runoff pollutants. So it's a really important transition zone, that shoreline zone, because it's that buffer between your upland zone and your aquatic zone. So that is of most concern, I would say, for lakeshore homeowners, but also for the county. We want to protect that because it is that transition zone. And the aquatic zone itself is what's in the water. That zone's a little bit trickier in the sense of managing. You definitely have to work with the DNR to do any kind of plantings, but aquatic vegetation is really, really hard to establish. So a lot of times you need experts from the DNR to help you with that, and success kind of varies depending where you're at. But yeah, so those are kind of the three zones and the different things going on within each of those zones.
Well, I can tell you, I scored zero in the aquatic part, but it was because it was taken in March when there was ice. So they couldn't really tell if there's any plants, because I know they look for specific plants and not invasive ones, but ones that should be there that are healthy for the lake. Hopefully when the weather gets better, I'll see that it's improved in that sense. So that was my worst score. My best score was on the top because I'm a big gardener. So one of the things they talked about was looking for trees and shrubs and unmowed plants and things. And of course, I've incorporated clover in my lawn and that sort of thing. So I got 65 out of 65 points for that. So I was pretty proud of myself. I thought, oh, good, I'm really doing good. And then that's the top part from where your house is to go to the road. So, you know, and that's pretty flat. And now I'm wondering about this because it's the next is what you call the
upland and then the shoreline zone.
Yeah, the shoreline. So in my case, the upland sort of ends and then there's a very, very, very steep bank. So does it start at the top of the bank and then go down to the shoreline? Is that what they count as the shoreline then, or how does that work?
I would say once you're and this is really common too in a lot of lakes, is they have those steep slopes that you're talking about. Once that slope kind of ends and it starts to flatten out, that flat area is where the shoreline zone would start, and it would go all the way to the edge of the shoreline. And it's going to differ by property because each property is a little bit different in size, but in your case it definitely would be that flat area on the bottom.
Well, on that one, I didn't do so great either. I have planted a shoreline pollinator garden, so I thought, well, I should do pretty good on this one because I planted this nice, all these plants along the edge. And let's see, what did I do? The shoreline zone, okay, was 9 out of 35. So I obviously have an improvement to go there. And so one of the things, I've got riprap, and which a lot of places do, is riprap something that's considered a bad thing or a good thing or indifferent, or, you know, sometimes you can't help it, I guess, on a shore.
Yeah, it's definitely indifferent in this case. So what's really hard is rock on the shoreline is not natural to this part of the state. When you go to the North Shore, it absolutely is. However, there's certain tools in the toolbox that we can use as resource managers to help people improve their shorelines. Riprap is often used as one. It does a really good job of helping, like with wave impacts and reducing erosion from the lakeside, but it doesn't do a really good job of holding soil together. So often what we say in Lister County is that we want you to use both riprap and native plants, because then the native plants can hold that soil, they can provide habitat and a bunch of other benefits that, you know, rock just couldn't. But again, it's going to differ by each property and how erosion's occurring and runoff, but definitely should have, you know, riprap and native plantings in conjunction with one another in order to get your biggest benefit.
All right. So what are some things when people are scored? Like you said, it doesn't mean you're going to come out and enforce anything or say you have to do this. With different scores, do you or who comes out and says, here's some things or here's some ideas what you can do to improve?
Yeah, so there's different options. You can always reach out to your local staff, whether it's county or soil and water conservation district. Otherwise, the DNR as well can help out with that. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of shoreline experts throughout the state, which is a little bit disappointing, and it's kind of a niche that should be filled, but there's still some local staff and states that they can help out. But yeah, essentially just come out, take a look, have a conversation, fill out the form and say, hey, these are areas that you can improve. And I think what most people need to remember, that's probably the most important thing, is improvements don't have to be large scale. They can be small. So even if you plant a couple trees, do 100 square foot native planting, like that's still going to provide a benefit. Now, it might not seem like that just to one landowner, but now imagine every landowner around the lake did that. Then we see those benefits. So we always encourage people to start small when they want to do projects and then do something, right? Like something's better than nothing, and it's going to add up if everyone around the lake does their part.
Okay, so the fact that I did get that 9 out of 35, I can improve that because overall it says my total land score was 74 out of 100, which is probably not the worst, maybe not the best.
Nope.
But there are things I can do, and they have some suggestions on here. And so is that, where is the problem that you see the biggest problem? Is it on the upland, the lakeshore, or in the water? Is there any indication of what you see as more common?
I would probably say the shoreline, but it's pretty close to the upland zone. I'd say aquatic is hard again because it's hard to establish native vegetation, and a lot of times that vegetation is drowned out due to flooding. You know, water quality is poor in an aquatic zone, so it's really, you know, that zone is really hard to establish it once it's gone. Not to say it can't come back, but it's really hard to do that. So I would say, yeah, shoreline and upland are pretty close. It's a lot of it has to do with land use activities, right? So what people's impacts are to their lot. If their house is, you know, maybe too big for the lot, if they're doing a bunch of retaining walls, you know, if they have a big patio, big decks, those are all things that we assess and try to see, hey, okay, if that's there, how can we improve it? And even if that stuff is there, they should be putting some kind of best management practice like native plantings or a rain garden to help address any kind of stormwater runoff or to provide habitats. And it's different for each property. It's really unique, but the goal of this whole thing is to meet not only the landowner's goals, but also the lake's goals, right? So it's called lakescaping, where you have this balance between what humans need and what the lake needs. And like, that's the main goal of this whole thing. And that's what we want people to achieve, is just finding that balance so everyone can kind of essentially live in harmony with the lake and we can have good water quality.
You know, I was thinking of lately, that's been in the news about Duluth. They've got that point that's sort of its own little sandbar with a number of smaller houses on it. And there was a person who's been buying up lots with, it sounds like, plans to build some big mansions on there. And of course, there's all of a sudden there's this concern like, oh my goodness, what are they going to do? Because if they're going to build mansions versus these, you know, smaller size homes, you're going to have a lot more impermeable surfaces. And that seems like that's a big issue around lakes now, is some of these, what I would consider oversized homes and patios and things like that with all these impermeable surfaces. Is that, are you seeing more of that as well?
Oh, yeah, that's one of probably our biggest problems. So the state and state statute, it says you're allowed up to 25% of impervious surface for the lot. Impervious surface is defined a little bit differently everywhere, but it's essentially a surface that prevents water from infiltrating. And so we've seen lake lots 40, 50, 60% of impervious surface. It's just too high. Now, part of that isn't that landowner's fault, right? And a lot of the rules have changed over time, but that's one of the other things we try to do with lakeshore owners, especially when they're applying for permits, is, hey, how can we reduce this? Because it doesn't have an impact to water quality. And yeah, some of those lots are just, they're not meant for big mansions, right? They're meant for small cabins. And, you know, essentially that might not be the right lot for you then. So keeping that in mind is really, really important, because in the long run, it can be really detrimental to your lot, and it can be detrimental to the lake if you're not considering those land use practices.
Now, some of them may be grandfathered in, I suppose. Are there anything retroactively that can be done if you're noticing that something's really strongly negatively impacting a lake because of the impermeable surfaces?
As far as enforcement goes, there's nothing we can do once it's there, if it's been there for a long time. However, again, usually what happens is it's triggered once they want to do something else, right? So if they, you know, they want to build a deck, and we notice that they never got a permit for the 40% impervious surface they have on their lot, then that's the time when staff have to work with them and say, hey, how can we reduce your impervious surface? Or is there additional practices you can install to reduce your stormwater runoff? Otherwise, the other option is if they don't want to add anything new as far as recreational opportunities, they could just always do like native plantings, rain gardens, things like that, rain barrels, anything to help address stormwater. But yeah, we can't, from an enforcement standpoint, unfortunately, we can't retroactively go after those people, but we try to work with them for future.
Because this is volunteer, obviously not everyone's going to do this. Why would you encourage somebody to do this? You know, I did it because I'm curious and because I'm on the Lake Water Quality Committee, and I thought, well, I should do this to see what I can do better. But not everybody maybe has that mindset. So if you were to tell somebody or ask somebody, why should I do this? What would you tell them?
I would tell them that I think it's important for them as a lakeshore owner to know what's going on with their property, right? So things have been changing more drastically now than they ever have, especially with, you know, increase in precipitation and temperature. So it's really good to understand what you have as a landowner and how it's being impacted. And then additionally, it increases that awareness and knowledge, and it might give you some ideas on how you can improve your lot. And improvements, again, don't have to be drastic, but something that will make it better for you, right? Like, you just always tell people, look for your goals and what you're trying to achieve, and we can help you meet those goals. So, yeah, it's more of an awareness and education standpoint, and that's really important, especially if you live on a lake, because you're a community, right? And so understanding that is really important, especially when you're trying to improve your lake.
Now, one thing I do notice is a lot of folks have these Kentucky bluegrass lawns, and they like to mow them right to the edge of the lake, and I think that's not necessarily the best practices. So what are some small things people could do that could possibly make a big difference?
Yeah, Kentucky bluegrass, so it has really small roots. It only has about 2 inches depth of roots. It also attracts geese, and no one likes pooping on their lawn.
Right.
So I would definitely say, it's not to say you can have some grass areas.
Sure.
I always tell people, like, you have your entire shoreline, right? And you're not using all of it. Most of the time, most people are only using a part of it, whether it's to get on their dock, maybe a beach sand blanket, things like that. So the areas that you're not using, just convert it. And convert it to some type of native planting. There are so many resources now for different vendors, different, you know, contractors, different examples of what you can do to install plants on your shoreline. And the best part about our native plants is that they're adapted to these type of conditions in Minnesota, like the weather we had, you know, the last couple days. Like those plants are well adapted for that, and they have these huge roots. Some of them go up to 15 feet deep, and you can't see it because it's underground, obviously, but that's why we encourage people to plant native plants and try to have that balance. You know, there's areas you're going to use on your shoreline. Leave those, you know, be however you want for recreation, but the rest of it, put it in native plants.
Well, I agree with you there. And the Lawns to Legume program, I know, has been encouraging a lot of people to plant native plants. And that's how I got started doing the shoreline program in terms of pollinators, native pollinators along the shoreline. Was I got a Lawns to Legume grant when they first offered them in 2019. And so that's one program I can think of. Are there others you think that you know of that can be encouraging to people to maybe change their management practices?
Yeah, Lawns to Legumes is great. I think it's up to $400 now for mm-hmm. cost share.
Yep.
I would also reach out to your local soil and water conservation districts and counties, because a lot of the there's these partnerships that are going on for watershed wide scale. So there is one for the middle Minnesota River, which you're located in, Karen, and then there's a whole bunch of other major watersheds in the state. And a lot of these major watersheds have activities within their big 10-year plan that says that they're going to install native planting. So I would reach out to your local offices and see if they have any cost share available. And a lot of times your local soil and water conservation districts are actually going to offer plant kits during their tree sales. So it makes it really convenient because it's a local office and it's really easy to get access to those plants.
That's good advice. Now, I know that ISG is holding a second annual Southern Minnesota Lake Resources Conference coming up on April 12th. Are you going to be talking at that and presenting anything about the Score Your Shore program?
Yeah, so on Friday, there's like a social hour and a chat, which is April 12th, and that's from 5 to 8 p.m. But then on Saturday, April 13th, that's when the actual conference will be held. It's from 9 to 5 p.m. at the Mayo Clinic Health System Event Center, and it's $10 to register. And I will be talking, there's two different things I'll actually be talking about. One of them's a Score Your Shore program, with a few other local partners, and then I'll be talking about lake management plans as well. But yeah, that conference was just started by ISG, which is great. I think we really need that, and it's just an opportunity for lake associations, state and local agencies to come together and learn about different topics about lakes and how we can improve them. So it was really good last year, and I'm looking forward to it this year.
Yeah, and I see that's, you could find that online at ISG under the second annual Future of Southern Minnesota Lakes Conference, and you can register there as well. And that's why I know that there was a note put out saying, or asking people to score your shore, so I think you could use it as examples. So I don't know if mine's going to be used as an example there, but how many of lakes are you going to be talking about when you do your presentation?
I think we'll be talking more just about examples of specific landowners. You know, okay. I had another landowner on Lake Tatanka, and she commented and said, wow, I have a lot of work to do. And, like, those are the kind of things that we, you know, that's the responses that we want to hear, because then we understand that that goal of increasing awareness and education was met. So we'll probably just have some instances from landowners, but I think we're going to break down the tool a little bit more and talk about it and different implications on practices you can install and things like that. So we'll definitely go into more detail about that tool at that conference.
Good. I hope we get a good turnout at that. That event will take place at the Downtown Civic Center in Mankato.
And on Saturday, the conference will actually be held, and that's where all the different speakers will come and talk about different topics.
Yeah, and it's an all day. They've got morning sessions, afternoon sessions, and a lunch. So it's important, I think, to register ahead of time.
Yep, definitely.
Anything else you want people to know about some of the programs or Score Your Shore or anything else that is important to note about preserving and improving our lakes and waterways?
Yeah, you know, I've been in my position for 6 years, and I've learned a lot over that time. And what I really want this to, you know, especially for lakeshore owners, is this to just be a norm, right? Like, you mm-hmm. just assess your shoreline, see how it's doing, whether you do nothing or not with it. I mean, that's up to you, but just that awareness and education it's a good practice for everyone to adopt. And just using this tool, you know, can help make, hopefully, spark people to make changes, right? These little changes add up over time. Water quality is a really difficult beast to tackle. It's something that was degraded over time. It didn't happen overnight, and it's going to take a long time to improve. But any help we can get from the public is really important, because that's what makes us, you know, reach our goals. So it's always a little bit of baby steps, but we'll get there. So I just encourage people to adopt this practice if they have a lakeshore lot.
Well, I know it has inspired me, because 74 out of 100 isn't good enough. So I will be doing some more, I think, native shoreline plantings to help improve the score and help improve the water quality as well. And I hope others will take an interest and do that as well. Where can people find more information about this program, if they want to?
The Minnesota DNR, you can either search Minnesota DNR on their website, and then you can search specifically, there's a search bar about Score Your Shore, or if you just Google Minnesota DNR Score Your Shore, it should pop you to that link. Otherwise, I would look at your local county and soil and water conservation district offices, because they might have some more information too about shorelines and native planting. So lots of resources out there, just sometimes it's hard to find them all.
We are talking with Holly Bushman, who is an environmental resource specialist with Le Sueur County, about the Score Your Shore program. And I want to thank you so much for this, and I look forward to hearing your presentation coming up on April 13th.
Yeah, thank you so much, Karen, for having me. I really appreciate it. And yeah, looking forward to April 13th.
Thank you so much, Holly. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Every Day is Earth Day is supported by Minnesota Valley Federal Credit Union. With two locations in Mankato since 1934, it pays to bank where you're part owner, member NCUA. More at mnvalleyfcu.coop. And Every Day is Earth Day is also supported by members of the Executive Board of the South Central Minnesota Clean Energy Council. Find out more at smcleanenergy.org.